Good morning. I was never sure how long to let the levity continue, but so as Pete said, I'm Scott Oakman. My wife Anita and I have been coming here to River Heights since 1995, with the exception of a short break where we went to Michigan for my training in psychiatry. And we returned 15 years ago when I took a job at Regents Hospital, where I am an inpatient psychiatrist and a training director. It's been my privilege to preach a couple of times a year with the volunteer preaching team, and so far they haven't kicked me off. So hopefully, yeah. Peanut gallery, be quiet back there. Anyway, since last September, we've been doing something together as a church where we've been calling this the Year of Good News, where we've been reading through the New Testament together, just a few chapters a week. And we are in the home stretch. We have done 1st and 2nd Peter the last 2 weeks, and we just have a few short letters left, then Revelation, and then boom, we have finished the entire New Testament. You should all get a certificate if you've been keeping up with that. And if you haven't been, it is not too late to jump on board and join us for the remaining 9 weeks. Last week, our Peter Benedict, talked about the first letter, 1st Peter, specifically the second chapter of that letter, focusing on what it means for our identity, our calling, and our community as Christians. And Peter used this analogy, Peter the Apostle Peter, of us being custom-cut living stones that are built into God's community and called as royal priests to help connect other people to God. And I'm going to kind of share the next step of that with some verses from 1 Peter chapter 5 that have meant a lot to me over the years, where he shifts that analogy from stones to sheep. So the Apostle Peter and me, he and I go way back. Peter is probably the most relatable character in the entire Bible. We identify with how initially reluctant he is, with how impetuous and loud-mouthed he seems to be, and with how very publicly he fails when it matters the most. He's not an intellectual guy like Paul. He's not a king or a prophet. He's just a fisherman who met Jesus. I met Jesus in high school a long, long time ago in a Methodist church far, far away, and really began walking with him a few years after that as a freshman at the university 40 years ago this fall. But meeting Jesus for me meant I got to know Peter. And that winter, my second small group Bible study experience was a set of studies on the life of Peter. And 1 week, they actually asked me to lead the study. So it turns out that being in this group was not just a matter of learning something, but it was also about learning to lead. And somewhere along the way, this passage about leadership came up, and it continues to pop up in my life as one Bible study has led to many other things. I want to read it first in the older Revised Standard Version, because that's how it echoes in my brain when I think of it. "Tend the flock of God that is your charge, not by constraint but willingly, not for shameful gain but eagerly, not as domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd is manifested, you will obtain the unfading crown of glory. Likewise, you that are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that in due time he may exalt you. Cast all your anxieties on him, for he cares about you." Lord Jesus, I thank you for these words. I thank you for your willingness to speak to us through your word, and just ask that what you mean to have said this morning would get said. In your name, amen. So who was this guy Peter, and how did he come up with words like this in this letter? Well, we know he was a disciple of Jesus. In fact, he was one of the three closest of Jesus' close friends. And in the Gospels, his story gets bracketed by two very personalized, dramatic encounters with Jesus. The first one is written down a couple places, but in Luke 5, when we meet him, he's called Simon. It's a nice, respectable Jewish name for a nice, respectable small businessman in a Jewish community. And Jesus asks him for a favor. He says, hey, would you lend me your boat? And Jesus teaches the audience from the boat. And when it's all over, he tells Simon, now go out where it's deeper and let down your nets to catch some fish. Master, Simon replied, we worked hard all night and didn't catch a thing. But if you say so, I'll let the nets down again. And this time their nets were so full of fish, they began to tear. Peter is filled with shock and awe, and his companions are filled with shock and awe. And he asks Jesus to go away. But Jesus says, don't be afraid. From now on, you'll be fishing for people. And he and James and John get up and follow Jesus. And they follow him for the next 3 years and see all of the wonders and miracles, all of the kindnesses and arguments that he gets in. And in the middle of all of this, Jesus pulls Peter aside with the disciples and says, who do you say I am? And Peter's response is to declare, you are the Christ. You're the Messiah, the divine King we've been waiting for. And Jesus says, good job, Peter. You are now, I'm going to call you Peter from now on. I'm calling you Rocky. I have renamed you. And on your rock, I'm going to build my church. So Peter's got to be feeling pretty good, you know. He's gotten called out as the top dog among the 12. And then all of a sudden, Jesus starts getting dark. He starts talking about going to Jerusalem and dying on a cross. And he says things like he's going to rise again after 3 days. And Peter is trying to be a good friend, and he says, Jesus, keep this quiet. It's not going to be this way with you. And Jesus responds to him, get behind me, Satan. So the guy's head has got to be spinning. Being with Jesus for Peter was a matter of constantly having his image of God rewritten and refigured out on a day-to-day basis. A few days later, Jesus says, Peter, you're going to deny me 3 times. And Peter says, no way, I'm never, ever going to do that. And then he finds out that Jesus was right. And at the time of Jesus' deepest need, Peter denies even knowing him. He also is fortunate enough to find out that Jesus was right about the rising from the dead thing. And he's one of the first to get the news that Jesus was alive and to be at the empty tomb. And at the end of John's gospel, John adds this very moving appendix, which is one of my favorite stories about Jesus. In John 21, Simon Peter tells the disciples, I'm going out to fish. And they said, we'll go with you. So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, don't you have any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. When they did, they were unable to haul in the net because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved, which is John, said to Peter, it is the Lord. And as soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him and jumped into the water. When they got to the shore, Jesus had already laid a breakfast for them, a fire of burning coals with fish and some bread, and said, come and have breakfast. None of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. Talk about a midlife career change. Fisherman to fisher of men, and now feeder of sheep. and how much grace from Jesus to give Peter the opportunity to three times affirm what he had denied just a short time ago. After this, we see Peter being filled with God's Spirit. We see him speaking with the power of the Spirit and healing people and leading this band of new believers that's about to become a worldwide church. And that's where he's writing these two letters to us, 1 and 2 Peter. And as part of these two very short practical letters, he's trying to encourage believers who are struggling. In 2 Peter chapter 3, he says, "This is my second letter to you, and in both of them I've tried to stimulate your wholesome thinking and refresh your memory. I want to remind you that in the last days scoffers will come, mocking the truth and following their own desires. They will say, 'What happened to the promise that Jesus is coming again?'" This was the main issue of the false teachings that they were struggling with. It wasn't great heresies, but it was just the accumulation of the everyday little lies that our culture tells us. What you're doing doesn't matter. You are wasting your time with this Jesus stuff. And isn't this kind of similar to what we deal with every day? Have you ever been told something like, "Don't be so heavenly minded that you're no earthly good"? Or, "It's okay to have a belief, but don't take it too far. It's okay to say you have faith, but you better have a backup plan or you're not going to be able to buy groceries next week." So we let these day-to-day realities dominate us. Things like earning our money and raising our children, taking care of basic needs, getting our daily petty squabbles. And Peter's audience is facing the same stuff. It's not widespread state-sponsored persecution, but the everyday practical struggles of what it meant to be a Christian in society. And the message of that culture, like ours, was, "Forget it. He's not coming. Do what you want." In the face of that, Peter reminds his people, "It's not easy, but hey, stick with Jesus. It will be worth it." And he writes these two letters to remind them that God has given us everything we need for living and that we need to stick with Jesus. This is what we call discipleship. It's being with Jesus for the long haul. And this is where we come to 1 Peter chapter 5. Peter turns his attention to the people who are leading these people who are struggling in society. "And now a word to you who are elders in the churches. I too am an elder and a witness to the sufferings of Christ, and I too will share in his glory when he is revealed to the whole world. As a fellow elder, I appeal to you, care for the flock that God has entrusted to you. Watch over it willingly, not grudgingly, not for what you will get out of it, but because you are eager to serve God. Don't lord it over the people assigned to your care, but lead them by your own good example. And when the great shepherd appears, you will receive a crown of never-ending glory and honor. In the same way, you who are younger must accept the authority of the elders. And all of you, dress yourselves in humility as you relate to one another. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So humble yourselves under the mighty power of God, and at the right time, he will lift you up in honor. Give all your worries and cares to God, for he cares about you." I love this picture of leadership. And I love that you can see that Peter has indeed moved from being a fisher of men to a feeder of sheep. And now he's telling us how to be shepherds too. Now, if you're thinking, "Oakman's up there talking about leadership, I'm not a leader, I'm tuning out the rest of this period of time," you're wrong. Because the first point of this leadership is to tend the flock that is in your charge. Care for the flock that is entrusted to you. God has entrusted you with someone, with some group of people. And this is your trust, your stewardship. My flock, as a psychiatrist, includes people with the severest mental illness and addictions. These are people who are constantly having the worst day of their life. And I am called to treat them with the respect and dignity that Jesus would. But what's even more important to me is that I've been entrusted with training the next generation of psychiatrists and developing doctors who are going to carry that forward and serve the mental health needs of the community. So here's my flock, I hope, my flock. I am intensely proud of these 31 men and women. They are compassionate, they are intelligent, they are fun. But I also know that they are facing incredible challenges every day. My concerns are not only that these guys are competent in their ability to care for others, but also for their well-being. Their training culture is not set up to care for them as people. You might have read about increased suicide rates for physicians in this country or the prevalence of burnout in medicine. And it's really important to me that in the 4 years under my supervision, they build resilience. They learn their strengths and weaknesses, and that as caregivers, they are able to care for themselves, that they can process all the stressors and trauma that they see and experience without losing their own souls in the process. I need to know them and their needs. Who has a new baby? I know some of you have prayed for Cynthia down there on the bottom row, third one over, and her having a new baby. Which of them has a spouse in another state, and they've got to get through a whole year of training before they can live in the same room as their spouse? Who has a parent that's critically ill in another state? Who's struggling with a relationship? So who is in your flock? You may not see yourself as a leader, but you have been entrusted with someone. Maybe it's your own children. Maybe it's a classroom of kids in children's church. Maybe it's a classroom of kids in a school. Your coworkers, your neighbors, your community. The first principle is to recognize that God has given you a flock, to recognize who they are and that they belong to God. The second principle of leadership that Peter brings out here is to watch over them willingly, not grudgingly. Now, I know that this is my weakness as a leader in terms of the flock of four children that God has given me, that there's a lot of times I'm very grudging about the things that they are asking me to do and how willing I am to share my time with them. But Peter's saying, watch over your flock willingly. Don't have the attitude that it's just a job. It's not a problem or a burden. It's an opportunity. Watch over them willingly. And watch over them not for what you get out of it, but because you're eager to serve God. That older version said, not for shameful gain. Now, if you are a public school teacher, if you are volunteering in children's church here as your flock, you're probably saying, what shameful gain? There is no money involved in this. But this is about a lot more than money. This is about a refusal to exploit others. There are many ways that we can use our authority over people for ill to them. You've heard way too much. Maybe you've experienced being abused by a boss, a teacher, even a pastor, who has used their authority to manipulate you or harm you. But if your attitude about leadership is that you are serving God in your leadership, that your flock is a trust from Him, you can't see them as a resource to be exploited for your own gain. Don't lord it over them, but lead them by your own good example. Our authority as leaders is not demonstrated by authoritarianism, but it's by putting the interests of our flock ahead of our own. It's not dominating or commanding, not asking people to do things you are not willing to do yourself. In medical education, we have the saying, see one, do one, teach one, with the idea being that we demonstrate what we want our trainees to do, that we watch them while they do it over and over again until they get it right, and that we enable them to teach others the same thing. Always realize that people have got their eyes on you. Your example matters. They are going to look like you someday. It was incredibly humbling to me the first time I observed a resident do an interview of a patient in front of me and realized that they were using the exact phraseology that I had used the day before with a different patient. People will end up looking like you if they follow your example. You who are parents know how scary that is, right? You have heard your words come out of your kids' mouths, and it's not always for good. I'm happy to share a short story about my oldest in this context, but not from up here. and you will see them in their mannerisms becoming like you. It is an incredible responsibility to be a shepherd of a flock because the sheep come to take on your qualities. The fifth item is that there is a payoff. There's not shameful gain in leadership, but there is a payoff. It is a long-term reward, a crown of never-ending glory and honor. Again, we are in this for the long haul. Peter did not change overnight, and your flock will not change overnight most of the time either. But Peter wants to remind you that the great shepherd sees you. They see what you are doing and that it is worth it. You will see a return on your investment of time, of prayer, of sweat and tears. Remember, this is precisely what Peter's audience was hearing was not going to happen. What their culture was telling them was wrong. Peter is reminding them, no, the chief shepherd does see, and he will return, and you will receive a reward. As you're leading, you need to also accept the authority of people over you. The best way to learn to lead is to allow yourself to be led. I worked with a counselor once who had above his desk the phrase, everybody has a boss. That was like his first rule of life. And to remember that we also are under authority, that you are accountable for your actions and called to give account for how you treat your flock. God is the ultimate power with authority over all of us, no matter how high up the hierarchy you are. So dress yourselves in humility. One translation says, be content with who you are and don't put on airs. He'll promote you at the right time. I find that it's always very tempting to compare myself to other leaders, to other people. What are they getting and I'm not getting? But this says to compare to God. We're all in the same station before God, and humble yourself before the Lord. Literally, it says put on the servant's apron. Focus on serving other people. You are waiting tables for Jesus when you are feeding their sheep. Finally, give all your worries and cares to God, for he cares about you. If you are leading a flock, you are going to have concerns for their well-being. You bring those cares to God and let him care for you. Because when it comes to caring for your flock, just like when you're in an airplane, you need to put on your own oxygen mask first before helping others with their oxygen masks. You need to breathe in the care that God has for you so that you can have compassion for others. This whole passage is a picture of what it means to be a servant leader, to serve the highest needs of others to help them reach their goals, to consider the effects of your actions on people as opposed to your actions' effects on bottom lines or personal advancement. Wherever you are on a hierarchy, you can apply this to how you care for people. You can identify that you have a flock that you are called to care for. There are a lot of bad styles of leadership around us. We are very used to leaders who lord it over others, who only look out for themselves, who blatantly exploit or abuse others, and don't act in others' best interests. And it's not just in business, it's not just in government. We've also seen it in church environments. Some of us have been hurt by those things. I just want to encourage you to think of the good examples. Who do we have among us that are examples of this kind of servant leadership? I think of Don Weber and the care that he has for his employees. I think of Anna Hunt or Carrie Lounsbury and how they care for their kids. I think of John and Sue Marsden, how they've cared for all of us for 30 plus years. I think of John Mesenberg and Claire Peterson. I think of Lisa Mandel making sure that I say what I'm supposed to say and that the mic gets turned off before I start saying things I'm not supposed to say. I think of Lynn Stafford, who made me the coffee to fuel me this morning, or Bruce and Bonnie Gustafson, who serve us all here. Let's be like them. Let's learn from those examples. Because think of where Peter learned his stuff, where he learned his leadership style. He learned from how Jesus called him, how Jesus treated people around him, the example he set, bending to the low, the outcasts, the unclean, the children. He learned from how Jesus exhorted him, corrected him, forgave him, and restored him over and over again. Jesus made it very explicit in Mark 10. He said, "You know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. But among you it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must be the slave of everyone else. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and give his life as a ransom for many." Peter knew that this style of leadership was the leadership that had changed him, and he built his leadership style around Jesus. He's not only teaching leaders about servant leadership, he's demonstrating it himself. He is serving his flock with this encouragement and serving those who serve. So one more time from the Message translation. "I have a special concern for you church leaders. I know what it's like to be a leader, in on Christ's sufferings as well as the coming glory. Here's my concern, that you care for God's flock with all the diligence of a shepherd, not because you have to, but because you want to please God. Not calculating what you can get out of it, but acting spontaneously. Not bossily telling others what to do, but tenderly showing them the way. When God, who is the best shepherd of all, comes out in the open with his rule, he'll see that you've done it right and commend you lavishly. And you who are younger must follow your leaders, but all of you, leaders and followers alike, are to be down to earth with each other, for God has had it with the proud, but takes delight in just plain people. So be content with who you are and don't put on airs. God's strong hand is on you. He'll promote you at the right time. Live carefree before God. He is most careful with you." Writing to leaders in a time of stress and suffering, he reminds them, live carefree before God. He is most careful with you. Cast all your anxieties on him, for he cares about you. One translation says he cares for you with deepest affection and watches over you very carefully. The picture I had was of the difference between swimming under the supervision of a lifeguard and under the supervision of a parent. A lifeguard hopefully is going to watch over you well enough to make sure that you don't drown. But a parent's going to make sure you've got enough sunscreen on, that you're having a good time, that you're treating other children well, and they are treating you well. They are going to watch over you with affection and care. So the bottom line is, know that God cares for you with deepest affection and care for others the same way. As you're leading others, allow yourselves to be led by God. Who is your flock? What cares do they have, and how can you care for them? Remember that they are your charge from God. Lead them willingly, not grudgingly. Don't exploit them. Don't lord it over them or dominate them. Lead by example. Think of your long-term payoff. Live under authority and accountability, and serve humbly. And give your cares to God. He cares for you. We want to end with some worship and prayer, so if the worship team could come on up and get ready. If we could also have some folks coming out here to the side to pray for you. There are just a few things that I thought people might want to receive some prayer for this morning. First of all, maybe in listening to this, you're saying, I have never had a leader like that. I really wish I had a shepherd like that in my life. You can have that kind of shepherd. You can ask Jesus to take over leadership of your life. I've been following him for 40 years, and it's been great. Not always easy, but it's been great. So if you would like to start that journey with Jesus, please come up and tell one of these praying people who are coming up to the sides to pray with you, and we'll pray for you about that. Some of you may see God as a lifeguard that is sitting up in that high chair and ready to blow his whistle at you anytime you step out of line. If that's your picture of God and you would like to feel a little bit more affectionate care from God, that would be another thing to ask for prayer about. And finally, if your heart is stirred by this idea of being called as a shepherd to God's flock, then God might be asking you to take on some leadership. And if that's the case, then come forward and let us pray for you realize that call of God on your life. We always end with three tips. I suggest that you jump on board with our Year of Good News. Read 1 John next week. Get ready for the final 9 weeks of this. But pray for your flock and let God care for you as you do so. I'll be happy to meet with you and chat with you outside, and the worship team will dismiss us when we are done. Thank you.